Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, permit me to begin my presentation by thanking my people of Miku South constituency once again for electing me to represent them in Parliament. I wish to say to them that their continued support is truly and deeply appreciated. Mr. Speaker, I rise to examine aspects of the Honorable Prime Minister's Appropriation Bill address to show whether they affect the St. Lucian population, and in particular, the Miku South constituents, in a beneficial or detrimental manner. I realize, Mr. Speaker, that the Prime Minister focused in his address on policies and policy shifts and on social and economic initiatives and also measures that he believes that would bring better deals to the people. However, there are no stipulated measures that indicate sustainability of the promised jobs, and more jobs. We in the Miku South constituency have realized that we are outside of the labor radar and that the talks of equity are only mere words until proven otherwise. Let me go on to the address, Mr. Speaker. And I'll try to quote pages and sections as I go along. On page 7, where it deals with modest increase in construction, mention was made in this section that a 74.9% increase in expenditure on construction projects in 2011 over the previous years. And as it read, on all accounts, this was unprecedented, a record, I believe. Unquote. Mr. Speaker, expenditure on construction was expected so as to keep the economy afloat. Agriculture had taken a battering for the effects of Hurricane Thomas. Tourism had contracted. There was a drop in tourist arrivals caused by the worldwide financial meltdown and recession, and also its effects on the increase in oil prices and increase on food commodities. On page 9, short-term prospects. The government is targeting a growth rate of 2.5% in 2012. And according to the Prime Minister, this will be the main, this will mainly be driven by the construction sector and supported by developments in the tourism and other sectors. Mr. Speaker, construction projects will come under capital expenditure. The provision of policy for capital expenditure in this year's budget is to utilize grants and loans for the purpose of carrying out capital projects to the tune of $494,921,000. Of this amount, $388,871,769 will be obtained from loans, and the remainder of $105,325,849 from grants, as was shown in the estimates. It is realized that for the year 2012 to 2013, in the estimates, there is no recurrent surplus. And so this is why the government has to depend on grants and loans to carry out its capital projects. On page 8, Mr. Speaker, I'm sorry if I go back and forth. It deals with central government fiscal operations in 2011 and 2012. And the Prime Minister indicated that expenditure was estimated to have increased, and that is in the second paragraph here. Capital expenditure is estimated to have increased by 34.8% to $402.6 million, representing, as indicated earlier, a record level by the government in any given year. Also, Mr. Speaker, I am a bit confused by this revelation. And the reason why I'm confused, Mr. Speaker, in the 2002-2003 budget estimates, capital expenditure, and if I can quote, read the figure out here, was $287,989,275, whereas the cumulative expenditure in terms of capital expenditure for March 31st, 2002, that would be for the year 2001-2002, was $163,755,584. This shows an increase of $124,233,691, which, Mr. Speaker, if you calculate this in terms of percentage, this would show approximately 75%, which over double the increase of 34.8% for 2011-2012. Now, I suppose that the Prime Minister conveniently forgot to cite or to mention this in his budget address when he spoke of record increase. Obviously, there are only three of us who were sitting in the House at the time of this budget presentation in 2002-2003. All other members were not yet in the House. So it is not right to say that this is a record, because in 2002-2003, it showed that much more was spent on capital expenditure over the previous year of 2001-2002. Of course, Mr. Speaker, the Prime Minister mentioned the problem of 9/11, September 11, 2001, and realized that this caused a lot of hardship for the government at the time. And Mr. Speaker, this was indicated in the growth rate at that time. In 2001-2002, the growth, economic growth rate was about 4%, and in 2002, minus 4%, and in 2002, a minus 2%, and it was blamed on 9/11. Now, in 2010-2011, we are still faced with the world economic meltdown, the world economic recession. St. Lucia itself was directly affected by Hurricane Thomas. We had previous to that Hurricane Dean. We've had the drought. We also had the problems with the Black Cicatoca, and prior to this, the leaf spot disease. So we were adversely affected, and therefore it was expected that the expenditure would have increased so as to keep the economy afloat. We go on to page 9, Mr. Speaker. Strategy for recovery. According to the Prime Minister, there was a deficit, and he mentioned this in his address, there was a deficit in 2002-2003 following the contraction unleashed by tragic events of September 11, 2001. He did mention that. Also, in December of 2002, apart from the big increase in expenditure, in capital expenditure, if we go to the hand side of 17th December 2002, this was a famous sitting of the House, Mr. Speaker, we will see that the Prime Minister at that time, in one sitting, made requests or brought a number of resolutions for borrowing sums of money, because he also spoke about the high debt, the high borrowing by the last government. And to mention some of mention the borrowings that were done, I will just give you an indication. There was a resolution to borrow $4.5 million for refinancing the banana recovery project. There was also borrowing of $730,000 for WASCO. There was also the borrowing of $2.8 million for roads development program. And there was also in that very sitting the borrowing of $41 million for financing government capital works programs and refinancing government's obligation to the former hire. There was also plus the borrowing of advance, which is another thing, of $25 million. All that was done in one sitting in 2002, December 17, 2002, which shows that there was a lot of expenditure for capital projects. And as I said before, the Prime Minister mentioned the contraction unleashed by the tragic events of September 11, 2001. So this, I suppose, he forgot to mention to show that the record actually was within that year and not in 2011. Page 10. Curing the deficits. Mr. Speaker, the introduction of VAT by September 1st, 2012 is an important step in that direction, as the Prime Minister stated. We on this side, Mr. Speaker, do agree to the implementation of VAT. But would like, I recall the Prime Minister saying that we agreed to implement VAT, but the leader of the opposition is now changing his mind. I don't think it is a matter of changing the mind. But I think the caveat there is that we would like to do so within a conducive economy. An economy where there is growth. The introduction of VAT within a sluggish economy will render the vulnerable even more vulnerable. Because if things are bad and those persons who are not working, they have to pay VAT, it's going to be very difficult on them. And what we are saying is we need to grow the economy, and if the economy has improved, then we can introduce. But we are not saying that we are against VAT. It was also said that it was the United Workers Party government that introduced VAT. But Mr. Speaker, I think if I recall, we have been speaking about VAT in this house since the term of office of this government in 2001-2006. And I recall in 2004, and if I can refer Mr. Speaker to Hansard of 26 April 2004, page 21. This is supposed to be a document of the House. If I can get it, Mr. Speaker. The Minister for Commerce, Tourism, Investment and Consumer Affairs had to say this at that time. And here's what, and I quote on page 23, the FTAA will require the removal of import duties, thus requiring us to modify our regime of indirect taxation. Indeed, this is one of the many reasons why St. Lucia and the other OECD states have been advised to introduce VAT. So VAT is not something new. It is not something that was only spoken about by the previous government or the previous administration. It has been spoken about since the term of office of this government in 2001-2004. And there are other examples that can be cited from Hansard to prove this, Mr. Speaker. And I would like to move on to page 18. And speak a little about the Youth Agricultural Entrepreneurship Program on page 18. I asked in the debate of the estimates, I cited this as a line item. I also want to say that this is an initiative I support, especially as Angers, which is within the Mikusaw community, is one of the sites selected for this program. But I hope, Mr. Speaker, that the youth of the Mikusaw constituency would be given an opportunity to participate in this program. I think some of them have applied, and they were hoping that the program would have come on stream a lot earlier. But I have received an explanation why it has not come on stream, but I look forward to it coming on stream, and that some of the young people within the Mikusaw constituency would benefit from this program. On page 22 to 23, it speaks of the Bois d'Orange Hypermart property saga. Okay. Mention was made, and the Prime Minister indicated to change that policy and terminate the deal for the development of the Bois d'Orange Hypermart property. I think it is the prerogative of the government to change the policy and terminate the deal. I mean, I have no objection to that. I mean, it is a prerogative to either change or, as it says, shift policy or change policy or add new policy. However, I only wish to say that there have been other deals that have cost government twice the amount, original amount, like the Blue Coral development. And although it was criticized, the government persisted. And now there is the building. And as was said during that time, it is an investment. So, although there was opposition, the government persisted, and here is the building. That's all I will say on this for now. Agriculture and Fisheries Development, page 52. Again, in the line item, in the estimates, we spoke of the black cicatoca control of the disease. Again, it was mentioned in the appropriation bill address. But there does not seem to be a clear policy on how this control will be implemented with the allocation of $5,287,393. I understand, Mr. Speaker, that there is a team. A team has been appointed to oversee this project. But, Mr. Speaker, I hope this is not another bureaucratic layer, such as BIRU, which is the Banana Emergency Recovery Unit that was established sometime, BTF, Banana Trust Fund, And of course, we know of the establishment of the banana company SLBC, and it's gone now. All of these layers were established to improve banana production, in particular in St. Lucia. But, Mr. Speaker, I hope that these layers do not only help to deplete the funds, the limited funds that could be utilized for increase in banana production, to pay for salaries and administrative costs. And in the process, providing employment for the boys and the girls. I can discuss with you, member. I'm not afraid to discuss with you. I'm not afraid to discuss with you. There is also an amount, Mr. Speaker, of $5,000. Yes, $5,000 for chopping down abundant banana peel. $500,000. Because I thought, my apologies, I thought it was rather small. $500,000 for chopping down abundant banana field. I wonder also, Mr. Speaker, how this would be implemented, because in some cases, persons who have abandoned their field have left the country and gone abroad. That is one. Some of them probably have gone into other fields of endeavor. But I believe much more is required than just chopping down the field, abandoned fields, to control that disease. Because when you chop down, they grow back. So in some cases, there would be need for complete eradication of fields rather than just chopping. Because especially with the rainy season, if you do it approaching, you will find that these fields, if they're not treated, they're not sprayed, even though you chop them, they will grow again, and you may compound the problem. So there may be need to go even further than chopping down. There may be need for complete eradication of certain fields, especially those fields that find themselves among banana fields that are being treated. So maybe this is one thing that could be looked into, not only chopping, but probably eradicating the fields completely, especially if they are found within fields that are being controlled. Increase on there's also on that page, increase in broiler chicken quota. This is welcome, Mr. Speaker, and if managed properly with the proper technical advice and support, farmers, I know, do have the capacity to meet a quota of 40% as suggested by the Honorable Prime Minister, and to go even further. I think most of the broiler producers were concerned about a reliable market for their produce. And if they can be assured of the 40%, and I'm sure that they can even produce even further, because, Mr. Speaker, I know, because at one time I did some broiler production myself, so I am aware there are a number of persons who are interested. Yes. I used to produce at least 2,000 every 6 weeks. So I know about it. I live in a rural area, so I've lived all my life. Not a mother city boy. I'm not a city boy. Cap? What is cap? I don't know cap. Sorry. Mr. Speaker, under water resource management, the Prime Minister indicated that certain water projects will be undertaken this financial year, and in particular, I think, if I'm correct, the Mabuya water project will be financed under the Japanese grant of $14 million. Mr. Speaker, it is hoped that the Miku South water project would be also financed from this grant, which I understand was given to restore systems damaged by Hurricane Thomas. And the water system in that constituency was badly damaged. Already, Mr. Speaker, there is an additional existing storage tank for the people of the Tirosha community, which means that the government would not have to find money to procure that tank. It's already set up. All it needs is to be connected with the various other developments within the system so that the people of Miku South can receive a constant supply of purified water. Mr. Speaker, I want to turn to education policies and initiatives, page 52. And I want to refer to a few of those initiatives mentioned in the address. Partial zoning is one of the initiatives. Partial zoning of secondary schools. I have nothing against zoning, Mr. Speaker. In fact, this is something I have always thought of. But there are challenges. There have been challenges, and there will still be challenges. And so this needs to be thought out and conceived properly. Because if that is not done, Mr. Speaker, it is going to bring about the misconception, that certain schools and certain districts are being discriminated against. I say so, Mr. Speaker, because right now, within the secondary school system, parents are given a number of choices to send their children, number of schools to choose from to send their children. And as you know, a number of parents try to opt to send their students or their children to the best performing schools. I don't know how the partial zoning will be tackled, where, what schools will first be tackled, but I would say to dispel any notion of discrimination, it would be best to try to plan properly and implement full zoning, so that the criteria set would be for each and every school rather than for some schools at a specific time. In this way, all schools, all communities would have the criteria, and they would not say that, why us, why we are being discriminated against. So my recommendation would be to study the plan, conceive your plan, do the necessary background checks, the necessary preparation, and try to implement it to avoid cries of discrimination. Another initiative was that A-level class being returned to the secondary school. Mr. Speaker, this is not a new concept. This is a concept that we have been trying to see how best we can implement. More than one option has been thought of, Mr. Speaker. And I will mention a few here. One option would be to have at least two A-level institutes, one in the north, one in the south, to cater for the varying circumstances and disparity in schools caused mainly through the introduction of universal secondary education. And you know, with the introduction of universal secondary education, all the schools do not perform at the same level. In fact, there are some secondary schools parents would not want their children to go there at all because of the performance at that school. In fact, Mr. Speaker, if we look at the Grand Rivière Secondary School, actually I think there are no Form 1s and no Form 2s at that school right now. The reason being, there is a decreasing population of secondary school students. And secondly, because of the performance of the students within that school. These are two of the reasons. There are other reasons, of course. So this is one option. A second option was to apply the process at our five best performing secondary schools with opportunities for students of other secondary schools to attend those schools. And the reason for this was because those schools were performing better. They had the necessary equipment, and they also had the necessary qualified teachers who could manage the program. Or, if you want to apply it to all capable secondary schools, with the option of students interchanging to do subjects of their choices at schools where those subjects are offered. Now, that is going to be a little problematic if you have to do it this way. If you have to implement it into all your secondary schools, it means there would be need for equity within schools in terms of equipment, facilities, teacher quality, teacher training. There would also be need for retraining and retooling of principals as well as teachers. But are we in a position to do this just now? In the process, No school, if you are going to have your A-level back into your secondary school, no school should be considered posh. And I think the zoning would help to eradicate this thing, if you had the zoning, because the zoning and that, I think, should go hand in hand. No school should be considered posh when compared to others. In the social terms, you have your posh schools and your poor schools and so forth. You have your deprived schools and you have this should not be, that should be no more. So If that is to happen, if you want to do things to all your secondary schools, zoning would have to go hand in hand with that, so that, you know, you wouldn't have one school way up and the other way down. This would also entail much upgrading of schools. Some schools have to be upgraded. Reorientation, refocusing and repositioning of schools. And possibly, it might require a new blueprint for the education system, because you would have the zoning, you would have the A-level college, the A-level classes in the secondary school. There is need for much planning, and I understand that this would happen not just immediately, but within 2 years' time. Moving on, Mr. Speaker, universal early childhood education. This is indeed desirable to give the less privileged and disadvantaged preschoolers an equal opportunity to access early childhood education. It is said that this is expected to come into stream within 2 years. But the question I ask, what is going to be the policy in the interim within this year? Now, I ask this question because during the debate of the estimates, I did ask about the roving care givers program. I did mention that this program was coming to an end, or funding for that program was supposed to have come to an end. I don't know what the situation is now. Are we going to allow this program to be terminated? If that happens prior to the implementation of universal early childhood education, it is going to spell trouble for the early child education sector and the social stability of those young children and parents who are involved in this program will be greatly affected. Mr. Speaker, I realize that in the estimates, debate in the estimates, I spoke about the transformation of Star College to University College, but I saw no policy on this, so I am hoping that maybe some explanation will be given why that was not mentioned in this address. I want to say that this is an initiative that has started to give real hope to St. Lucians, hope to several St. Lucians. And I'm saying something needs to be said to keep their hope alive so that their hopes are not crushed. But nothing was said here, and there was no line item also in the estimates to indicate anything about this matter.
Honourable Member, you have 15 minutes remaining to conclude your contribution.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'll keep to my hour. Mr. Speaker, there is also under the youth a program, an initiative called YEP. I will always support policies, Mr. Speaker, for the upliftment of our youth. More so, programs that will provide them with hope for an opportunity for a better life. So that I'm smart. However, Mr. Speaker, I am a bit weary because there was a program, a similar program introduced during the term of office within 2001-2006 called YAP. I think it meant Youth Apprentice Program. And that program was introduced with the hope and anticipation that the private sector would come in, would join the government and provide matching funds to enable this program to be implemented. However, this did not happen because I don't think the private sector was too keen. They were not too keen in matching funds. I also understand that the Prime Minister said that it is expected within this program that the private sector would make some sort of contribution. I think we need to be able to sell these ideas to the private citizens or the corporate citizens, the private sector, show them the benefits. It's not only going to benefit the youth, it's also going to benefit the country on a whole. Because if the youth benefits, the youth is gainfully employed, they learn certain skills, they will not find time to linger on the block and to cause mischief because of no work or no jobs. I think we need to sell this idea to them, not just put it into our address, but we need to have dialogue with those persons so that they can see the benefits, not only an individual benefit to the youth, but a benefit also to them. They may get persons who are properly trained, who can help to grow their own business, and also which is going to be beneficial to St. Lucia. Mr. Speaker, one more. There's one more thing I'd like to speak about, Mr. Speaker, because I guess my time is coming to an end. The vouchers for entrance to secondary schools. I spoke about the access, education access fund. I think that was spoken about in the SMS. I think this is good to return this. And I realize here that a one-off bursary of $500 per student to eligible parents at the start of school or the school year. Those are the students who graduate from primary school and who could be going to secondary school. I think this is good. What I can say here is that I am happy that parents have to apply because not all parents definitely need this assistance. So if they apply, then of course you will see their need. And in some cases too, what we have discovered that there are some parents who are very hard-pressed. Some of them have as many as 3-4 students at secondary school. Now, this is for those entering. But in the previous thing, we also gave a little assistance to those who had, say, 3-4 students, 3-4 children at secondary school, although they were not in the form 1. Some of them would have been in the form 3, form 4. Some of them could not pay for example, CXC fees, and the school would not allow them to register if they did not pay their fees. And some of these funds were utilized to assist parents, especially parents, as I said, who had three or four children attending secondary school. So I'm glad that this initiative is being continued. And as I said, I hope that the parents who need it most will benefit from it. Mr. Speaker, I think I will stop here. I want to thank you for the opportunity given to me to make this humble presentation on the appropriation bill addressed by the Honorable Prime Minister. Thank you very much.
The Honorable Arson James, Member of Parliament for Miku South.